Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, the podcast about living a fat expat life. I'm Kirsty Rice and today I'm back in Qatar after a whirlwind week which involved a big fat expat meetup in Singapore and a trip home to Australia. We initially thought today's episode would be all about our first big fat expat meetup. And we do have a recording of that for you. But we also ended up chatting about a little bit more than that. It was the anniversary of Nikki's mum's death this week. And with me arriving back from Oz after my father-in-law's funeral, we kind of accidentally had a chat about expat funerals. We've often said that you can pick any topic and put the word expat in front of it, and it'll instantly change the perspective. And the same can be said for funerals. Like, who goes home for the funeral and who doesn't? And how do you deal with the reality of both of those situations? Amongst all of this, though, we have managed to have a few giggles. And, well, let's just crack on with it, shall we? Here's the ever fabulous serial expat, Nikki Moffat.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. But how are you, freshly landed?
Oh, I am. I am freshly landed. Got in this morning at about 5:30 and promptly got home and told my children to get ready to go to school because they'd already missed enough days. So, yes, not the most popular mother on the planet today.
And how long did they have to between when they arrived and landed and got home?
About 15 minutes.
That's enough to brush your teeth and your hair.
I know, and you will love that my 13-year-old son didn't feel that there was any need to get dressed get changed out of what he wore for his 14-hour flight. Do you know, it would have been even longer than that too, because I think it's like an hour and a half from Brisbane to Sydney and then 14 hours from Sydney to Doha. And he thought he might just slip on his backpack and head off to school in the same shorts and T-shirt.
Well, that's what there's shower in a can for, as my 13-year-old always tells me.
Is that what he calls it, shower in a can?
Not that he uses it very often, which luckily he doesn't need to, but the day will come. But he goes, Mum, I'm not going to shower. I've got a can.
No.
But that is the benefit of no school uniforms.
Yes, yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I tell you the interesting thing I've found about school uniforms. You can tell me if you've heard this before or not. Because we had my father-in-law's funeral this week, which was why we were back in Australia. But when, because all of the children went, and so I bought them an outfit to wear. It was bizarrely very similar to like the same prep for going to a wedding, right? Because you're going to, you get dressed up, you're going to see all of your relatives, grandma's going to be there. Do you know, everybody has to look nice, all of that sort of thing. It was very, very strange. The boys even wore really similar outfits to what they wore to Auntie Susie's wedding, you know, a couple of years ago. And my mum said to me, because, you know, she was in South Australia, I was in Adelaide in the city, but we were heading to Brisbane for the wedding, and I said, oh, I just have to get Lizzie's outfit. And she said to me, oh, well, won't she wear her school uniform? And I said, no, because that would be very strange, because we would take it, you know, to a different state. And she said, oh, darling, when I've always known that children, if they're going to a funeral, they wear their school uniform. And so, of course, you can imagine me being me, I've asked absolutely everyone. No. And people have said yes. And there were, at my father-in-law's funeral, there were a few of the cousins came in their school uniform, but they had been at school that day. But I've heard that that is a thing, that kids always wore their school uniform. And I actually think that is so clever, because
You don't have to dress them.
Yeah, you don't have to dress them. They look dressed up because they're in a suitish style thing. But, yeah, I don't know. Had you ever heard that one before?
I had heard it, or I'd seen it, or I remembered it or something. But, yes, I had heard about that before, the school uniform thing. Well, it just makes sense. And lots of kids I mean, funerals are often also held on weekdays, so lots of kids go to and from funerals from school.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so it was very strange because, of course, you know, you're buying all the clothes and you don't want to tell every man and his dog that you're going to a funeral because it is a complete Debbie Downer of a conversation. And I don't mean to laugh when I say that, but, I mean, I think I've had so much funeral stuff in the last week that it is a bit of a giggle fest now because we've all had our moments. But I found that, like, Greg and I would run into people and we'd really kind of give each other a sideways look for, are we going to tell them exactly what we're here for, or do we really just don't want to go down this path? Because you know, the minute you say, oh, we're
it's
home.
It's a whole conversation.
It is a whole conversation. And it's like, oh, I don't think I want to have this conversation with you. And then you think, oh, God, they're going to find out later. And you know, I don't know. It's
horrifying.
Yeah. But I know.
And also, a lot of people also don't know how to deal with that situation. You know, I mean, I know it's a whole conversation, but. And then it's hard when people say awkward things because I am really good at saying awkward things when people pass away. I was in South Africa and I came home for a friend's funeral and they were really close friends of ours, and he had been a groomsman in our bridal party and I had thrown her hen's party when they lived in another city, and we'd both been expats overseas together, and we were in South Africa and I came home and I fronted up at the funeral. I said, you know, Nick, sorry, only one of us could come. You know, it was a coin toss to see who came. And he looked at me and said, well, no, I hope you won. I said, oh, yes, sorry. We both really wanted to come. You know, sorry, so awkward. It's just really, things like that are just so awkward for people. And then you remember it for the rest of your life like I do.
Yes.
And I'm sure he's totally forgotten it, but I will remember it forever as just the most awkward thing to ever say at a funeral.
Funerals are the most bizarre thing, aren't they? Like, I think, you know, my mother-in-law, she was married to my father-in-law for 50 years and they were intensely together. Do you know, they were an expat couple, they travelled the world and they were just beautiful together, and she will be, I can't even imagine her without him. And at the funeral, she was just so, you would have thought it was a wedding. You know, she was so talking to people and hugs and giggles and almost like it was her job to make everyone feel comfortable and her job to make everyone good. And I said to her when I left her, I have learnt a lot from you these last few days, and you've really taught me a lot. And she said, oh, I think it's my faith that's made me that way, but I also think too it's her optimism. She's one of those incredibly positive people. And when we were all getting together in the days leading up to it, to the actual funeral, we all kind of got together on the Saturday in Brisbane, and so there were a lot of lunches and dinners where we saw different people, and so quite often, you know, wine was opened and people would have a toast, and I noticed with her, every toast she would say, here's to the future. You know, because other people would say, here's to family or here's to whatever. And she'd say, here's to the future. And I was thinking, oh, my God, I'm not sure I could be so good. Do you know, I think if I had been married for 50 years and Greg was gone, I would be feeling so pessimistic, you know, that it was more to the end, that it was the end of something. But to look at something like the beginning of something, she was amazing.
But she's also sounds like an amazing woman and an amazing parent and grandparent. Mm-hmm. So she's also the matriarch of the family, really. So she's also feels responsible for sort of keeping it all together.
That's it, isn't it? Yep.
And that, you know, that's kind of, you know, when you talked about being like at a wedding, so awkward funeral story. So when I flew to Australia, when my mother passed away and for her funeral, I went and had my hair done that morning. I got a blow dry.
Yes.
and they said, oh, do you have a special occasion? And I said, oh, it's my mother's funeral. And that was it.
The conversation. Yep.
The conversation. And, you know, it was, I said it's a celebration of her life, which it was.
Yes.
And, you know, and I wore, you know, a bright blue dress. And I thought, you know, I just want to have good hair.
Yes.
So, you know, and I felt the same way that you talking about, you know, flitting around. I felt that I had to speak to everybody, make sure everybody was okay, you know, all that kind of stuff. And,
yes.
You know, it's just one of those things. You just feel like you've got to hold it all together and keep it going. And, you know, it's one of those things that just, I mean, everybody's experience is different, but I had a very similar experience.
Oh, you are so right. I took the girls to get their hair washed and blow dried because they both have massively thick hair. We didn't have a hairdryer in the apartment we were staying in, and this was just easy. I said to them, look, we'll go and find one of those, you know, Priceline hair places where they've got products in the front and a hairdressing salon yes. at the back, and it's cheap as chips. And that's what we went and did. And I totally get you because same thing, people say, oh, special occasion? What are you up to? You know, what are you doing? And we managed to avoid it then. But I remember when we were getting on the plane from Adelaide to Brisbane, the Qantas guy said to us, oh, off on holidays? And we all just stared at him blankly. And I said, oh, that's a bit hard to say. We live in Doha, but we've got a place in Adelaide and we're on our way to see family in Brisbane. He goes, well, yes, it's definitely a holiday. And I wanted to say, no, it's definitely not. But, yeah, I'm not going to have this conversation with you as I'm trying to check in onto my flight.
Yeah, you were trying to give him an out and he was, like, not taking it. Was not getting the hint.
Yes. So tell me, Nikki, when your mother died, did you all go home for the funeral?
We didn't. It was very difficult. Actually, this week is the anniversary for us as well. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, this wasn't in the notes. All right. This is the anniversary of her passing. So when we moved to America, she was always our first visitor whenever we moved. And the day we moved into our house and our container arrived, she arrived as well. And she was on a bit of she called it a farewell world tour. So she had spent 6 months or 3 months traveling, visiting her many, many, many friends all around the world. She had end-stage cancer and the treatments had stopped working, so she decided to take her quality of life and tour with it.
Yeah.
So by the time she got to us, she spent 3 months with us, and she was hospitalized twice when she was there, which was a very interesting introduction to the US healthcare system. Mm. But in the end, she was able to fly home. They thought that they might be able to do something further just to give her a little bit longer. And so she had been with us for nearly 4 months when she left, and she passed away within 6 weeks of leaving us. So I actually had just gone by myself because she'd been with the kids and my husband and all of us for that time. And so, you know, we had had a lot of special time with her. And when I was actually training to run the New York Marathon, because I was raising money for a foundation that she had the same cancer that my friend who passed away that I said the stupid thing at the funeral at. So I was raising money for that foundation, and I was training for a marathon. So she... And that was the year of Hurricane Sandy. It's all very complicated. So she was getting more and more ill, and she was telling me, no, you need to stay, because she'd been there while I was training and seen me do all my runs and everything. She said, you need to stay, run the marathon, then come home. And I said, okay. And every day I'd call and I'd say, is today the day I need to come? And everyone would say, no, that's fine, you can stay. And then Hurricane Sandy happened, and then New York was all in uproar and they didn't know whether the marathon was going ahead. And my brother rang me and said, doesn't matter, you've got to come today. Aww. So I flew home, and as I landed in Sydney, my friend who had meant to be coming to New York to run with me picked me up from the airport and drove me down to see my mum, and they had cancelled the marathon while I was in the air. So I actually got to run the following year. I didn't lose my place, which was awesome. But yeah, I just went by myself, and I was just there for a couple of days before she passed away. So, but it was important that I was there.
Yeah.
For me, and it would have been very difficult, with the children. We had just moved to America, and Yeah, it was a very complicated situation. And I know everyone has a different situation, but for us, that's what we decided to do at the time.
Yeah, and it is so complicated. You know, with everything we do in the podcast and every topic you talk about, if you put an expat in front of anything, it makes it a conversation. Do you know what I mean? Like, so yes. Death, even expat death, is more complicated than death at home regularly. And I think the fact that your mum had been there, so your mum obviously got to sort of say goodbye to the kids as well, because when she would have got on the plane, she would have known that that was probably the last time she was going to see them.
Yeah, she did. And she did, and it was very hard, because I knew that's what she was doing, but they kind of didn't know.
Yes.
My son did. I mean, my son, he's very attuned. You know, he used to sit on her lap and say, "Oh, Mama, I can feel your whole body vibrating," which was, you know, which is so strange, because outwardly she looked totally fine, but her body was obviously shutting down and not doing great things. So, you know, he was very attuned to her, and he knew that, you know, he probably wasn't going to see her again. And it was more difficult for him, but it was really good that she had all that time with them. You know, she read them. She bought my series of Winnie the Pooh and read them stories every night. And, you know, she just did fantastic things with them that they will always remember. And we always talk about, you know, remember when Mama, you know, and she visited us everywhere, but that was kind of special because she was there for over 3 months. So
yeah,
it was a really special time for us all.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we had the situation of my father-in-law also had cancer, and he kept up with the kids up until probably about 9 months ago, and then when he sort of started to get progressively worse, we kept the kids away because we knew that he didn't want them to see him like that. He wanted them to remember him as him. And it was really interesting when it all happened and the undertakers were saying, oh, they were asking my husband and his brothers and sisters if they wanted to see the body. It was a definite no, you know, because they knew that he wouldn't have wanted them to see him, you know, right at the end. So for us, it probably worked completely differently in that you got to have those moments and that goodbye and that lead up. And for us, when we had always thought that when it happened, Greg would get on a plane and go home because that made the most logical sense. And also financially, I mean, I think it's really important that people be honest about what that looks like, you know, for an expat. You know, for us, for everybody to go home is probably, you know, a $15,000 exercise by the time we've all flown home and then all found accommodation somewhere to be, and then all those extra meals and, you know, all the bits and pieces, the rugby tackle bag,
the new outfits,
the blow dries, you know, but just everything that gets into that. And so, but when it came to it, when it all happened, I just kept saying to Greg, it just doesn't feel right for the kids and I not to go and be there, because they need... It's going to be so strange for them when they go to see Grandma and Granddad next time and Granddad's not there and they've missed the whole thing. Do you know, there's been no kind of closure. And so as it turned out, because Granddad's funeral ended up being quite big and all the cousins, you know, came down from the country and everyone flew in, and I think that my guys probably got a really good understanding of who he was, and also to see my husband give the eulogy. I think watching your dad give a eulogy and seeing him kind of break down at the end and all of that, I think they needed to sort of see all of that, because that it had all been so hidden from them.
I can see that, and I totally agree. But it also is a financial situation.
Huge.
You know, some people just can't do it.
Yes.
You know, and also timing and all that kind of stuff. It's just a very difficult thing, and I'm just so glad that you guys got to do it because it makes it very special when you can.
You know, we didn't have a topic for today's podcast because we were going to just have a look at the trip to Singapore last week and talking about big fat expat meetups and all the rest of it. But I think maybe the underlying topic might be expat death and how it sort of rolls out and what it looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Halloween, a couple of days ago.
Halloween.
What happens in Germany for Halloween?
Well, my kids have gone from hero to zero because really we came from America, which is the hero of Halloween. So America is the hero of Halloween, and in America all things are possible. And it doesn't matter if Halloween's on a Monday night, people still go trick-or-treating for hours and hours, and there's still crazy sugar-crazed kids running round and round with silly things like Reese's peanut butter cups, which should be illegal, but never mind. And other kinds of candies. So in Germany, it's not such a big deal. There were some interesting things that we learned. The kids in the junior school were allowed to dress up to go to school, so that was fine. And then they all had parties in the classroom.
Yes.
So, you know, we went and did activities, and I supervised the apple bobbing. And I showed some girls how to hold each other's hair back, and I told them, be good life skill.
Oh, it's a very important life skill. I always say that when I look at my two daughters, I can see that one has been trained to hold the other one's hair back, that's exactly how I explain their different personalities. That one, they'll both be at the nightclub, but that one will be holding that one's hair back.
So anyway, I did that, and I hope that they didn't go home to their parents and say, hey, so strange.
That
today.
Australian woman.
Anyway, the only Australian in the class. What a surprise. After the International Melbourne Cup coverage, but we don't want to get off track there. So we had that in the classroom. And then really, unfortunately, a girlfriend of mine was in a car accident, and she called me and said, can you pick up my kids after school? Because there was a disco after school, so there was a Halloween disco.
Oh, wow.
So they had the Halloween disco, and I picked up her kids as well. So then I brought all the kids home, took hers to her place and mine to my place. And I was like, I don't think there's going to be trick-or-treating.
There's a big thing I'm missing here. There's a big thing I'm missing, that you actually have a friend.
I wanted to... Yes, I wanted to say I'm quite proud that she called me. I was like, yes, really sorry you have a car accident, but yes, you called me.
Because what are we in? Are we week 11 of the move, I reckon now?
So no, 12. We're saying it's 3 months. It's 3 months at the end of this week. So.
But there you go, 3 months, and you've got a friend who's called you in crisis. You're doing well.
I actually was pretty proud, I have to say. And then I said to Sam, it's so bad that I think it's good that she called me when she had a car accident. But anyway, she is fine, and which is the important thing. Anyway, so she said, I'll text you later if my kids go out trick-or-treating. She has two older kids and two younger kids, and or teenagers and sort of smaller kids.
Yeah.
And she texted me, she said, strangest thing, they're trick-or-treating on the main street, so the shops give out candy.
Oh, my
gosh. So they don't trick-or-treat in people's houses necessarily, but they go to all the shops, and the shops give them a little piece of candy. And I said, oh, God, that sounds too traumatic for me, because she lives like 6 blocks away. I was like, I'm not bringing my kids. So I said to Willow, there's a trunk or treat at school on Saturday as well, and another Halloween party. So I think they're kind of really trying to make up for what doesn't happen.
Right.
And a trunk or treat is, of course, when you have your car trunk open and decorated in a very scary manner, and then people come and take handfuls of candy out of your very scary trunk.
Right.
And so I said, just wait till the trunk or treat. And then, of course, as soon as I said that, the bell, you know, we live in an apartment building, and the buzzer went. And then I opened the door, and there's like everyone's in our apartment building, because you can see we only have two floors of residential, are standing outside their apartments because someone's rung all the bells. And then this group of all these kids from my kid's school appears on the stairs trick-or-treating.
Wow.
So my kids started yelling at me. I'm like, how about you give them some candy and yell at me later?
So your kids couldn't join in because they weren't dressed and ready for the action.
They weren't dressed. They weren't ready for the action. They were, you know, like it's a whirl. You know, when kids come trick or treating, it's like a whirlwind. Like yes. They come through, and yes. There's like 10 of them, and then they. So this is just a group of kids that were on their bus. They're all boys, and they were kind of in age from sort of grade 7 to grade 4, and they're just all out trick or treating together. And I was like, next year, you can do that next year.
Now, I just realised we haven't had your apology. You need to apologise
to
America.
I'm apologising to America. God, I'm having a great week. So I'm apologising to America on behalf of myself for incorrectly saying the date of Labor Day. Labor Day is, of course, the first weekend in September, not August. I was cutting summer short, which I don't know why I did that. So I apologise, and I promise in future, for all future date references, I will determine, I will try to Google them in advance, and if I don't, I will put a waiver on them to say this could be an incorrect date. I'm just throwing it out there. So I am very sorry, America and Americans, because I know that's the most important thing you want to hear this week.
Oh, absolutely. Gosh, that election's nearly over, isn't it? Unless, of course, you're listening to this 2 years later and you've got no idea what's going on. But it is November in this week.
Yes, it's about to be the second Tuesday in November, and that's when the US presidential election is, and when we'll find out whether what's going to happen.
Oh, it's scary.
Crazy.
It's scary. All right, so last week I kicked off the week by going to Singapore, which was, I have to say, Nikki, just absolutely, and I'm not saying it to make you feel bad.
No, I hate you.
But you missed out. It was so, so good. It was so, so good. It was really good fun. So we had the Big Fat Expat Meetup. I didn't take one photo, I don't think. I think I took a tiny bit of video of Kelly up on the stage doing the introduction, and then I was hopeless at getting any other photos done until right at the end I took a picture of the group that I was with at the end. But next time we have to do it again because it was so, so good to see.
I think we should do it once a quarter. We should pick a destination and go.
Yep.
And plan it. And maybe we should have like a vote in to see who wants us most. Or what's you, and I'm coming anyway. And then and then we can see where we're most wanted, and we can go around the world.
Yes.
But you
yes. And I think what was really lovely though was Kelly, actually, and when we're talking about Kelly, I'm talking about Kelly Nash, who is
an author,
and she's the author of a book called Singapore Culture Shock. And she helped organise the day. One of the best things she did was she came up with an idea of putting everyone who came on their own onto a table together. So when you walked in, there were two tables and they had signs on them saying, if you've been brave enough to come on your own, take a seat here. And one of the best things was at the end of the day, those people were the last ones to leave.
I know, that's awesome. I was talking to Kelly, or you know, emailing her about that, and she said that was the best thing. She said they were the last ones there. Yep. They had to be kicked out.
Yep. And that's what it was all meant to be about, right? It was meant to be that it's a big fat expat meetup, and that it's about making new friends and putting yourself out there, and a day for expats to come together. And so that was the most perfect thing.
Yeah, and it sounds like amazing. So Georgina from the Hilton did a fantastic job of organising. Well, Georgina's not from the Hilton. She just lives there.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, Georgina happens to be married to the manager of the Hilton. And so Georgina jumped in and got it all set. And, it was like that British precise organisation. The tables weren't set correctly. Georgina made a comment. The tables were set correctly within 5 minutes. She was perfect. Brilliant. She was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, everyone had a glass of wine. The food was fantastic. We were in the ballroom. It was just superb. Everything was fantastic.
And we're going to listen to it. Do we get to listen to it now? Do the people that weren't there, do they get to hear?
Yes. So we're very lucky that it was all recorded on the day. And so I think now we have a recording of the reading that I did. So why don't we play the reading and then I'll talk to you afterwards.
Okay. First of all, we just want to say thank you to all the wonderful sponsors that have generously donated their goods and services for today. To the Hilton Singapore, who's put on today and also donated a lunch for four people at Glow. Variety Communications, who are recording this for Kirsty and Nikki's podcast, and will actually be coming around to do some interviews later to go on the podcast, so just be warned. Our other sponsors are Urban Remedy Asia, who've given you all a year subscription to their website that comes with a goodie bag of fitness stuff. And if you're not into fitness, there's also a magazine and 30% off an organic food delivery. So that's good. Our other sponsors, we've got Liz Ho Photography, who've thrown in a photography session. Takesha Meyer have popped in some vouchers. Treasury Wine Estate have given some booze. Gallagher Living, there's a candle over there. Andrea Galkova Photography has supplied a gorgeous print, and MB Art have also put in a print. So we'll draw those raffles after Kirsty speaks. We'll have a quick wine top-up break and draw the raffles after that. Where was I up to? Wine. Okay. Thank you. As I said before, this day came about by Kristen posting on Facebook that she wanted to meet new friends to get out of her homesickness funk, and it's turned into an event. And the reason these things are important for us expats is that there's no truer thing than the fact that your friends will leave over and over and over again, it seems, most of the time. So if you get a chance, try and introduce yourself to someone new to make them feel welcome. We do have over here two tables of ladies who've all fronted up on their own and don't know anyone. So this is a great place to hopefully make some new friends. You never know, you might just click and become lifelong friends, or at least until one of you leaves, which is usually if you've made a good friend about 2 months later. For most prospective expats, when you get that news that you're moving countries or you're moving overseas for the first time, the first thing you do is look for advice from those people who've gone before you. Now, when I moved in 2000 and 2011, believe it or not, there were no Facebook expat groups, as shocking as that is. As bewildering as that is, there was no Singapore Expat Wives, there was no Nice Expat Women of Singapore, there was no East Coast Mums, and there was definitely no real Singapore Expat Wives. 2011 was a world where no online place existed that you could ask 17,000 women for their opinions on such important things like, where should I get my iPhone screen fixed? What's the password for the library? And post a photo of your child's severed finger and ask, you know, should I take them to the hospital? I'm pretty sure those Facebook groups all ask the same questions all around the world. So without the help of Facebook groups and living in a suburb of Melbourne where relocating overseas was pretty much a foreign concept, I turned to the only expat I knew, which was Kirsty Rice. Or Shemozzle, as I knew her, because that was her screen name. Do you still use that? Yeah? I first came across Kirsty's writing via the Australian women's website, Mamma Mia. They had a post there called Expat Files, I think, and Kirsty's name had popped up on there. So when it came that we were moving to Singapore, it was her blog that I reached out for to see what I needed to do. Now, obviously, she doesn't live in Singapore. She's never lived here. She's lived north and south of Singapore, but not here. So she couldn't answer my day-to-day questions about Singapore. But through her blog and our occasional chats on Twitter, I got great reassurance. And if I've always thought if Kirsty could move to such hardcore locations like Libya, which still blows my mind, with four kids, then I could move to Singapore with two. And I think that's the great thing about Kirsty's blog. It's full of warmth and reassurance. I'm not sure if that's intentional. I think it's just Kirsty. I'm sure she's been moving around chatting. And for me, I actually only met Kirsty for the first time today. And she was just like she is online. So that was awesome. Like most blogs, Kirsty started writing four kids, 20 suitcases and a beagle in the days before social media was really a thing. She wrote to let her family and friends know how things were going in Doha. But you only need to look at this room to know that Kirsty's blog has, what began as a personal blog, has become much more. Kirsty has, probably unintentionally, created a community of expat women all around the world, and that's now expanded with the Two Fat Expats podcast. So now, over to Kirsty.
Hello, everybody. How are you? Bad planning on my behalf. I've actually got this on my computer, so we're all going to have to wait just a moment while it warms up. But firstly, actually, before I start, Kelly has been very, very quiet about something that she should be talking about more. I don't know if those of you who are in Singapore have seen Culture Shock Singapore. If you're new, you might want to get a copy of this. Kelly actually wrote this, which is a huge, huge thing, and I think she deserves a round of applause. Because, yeah. Like, that's a proper book. Much more substantial than anything I've ever written, that's for sure. Okay, so having just come from the table over there, I'm sorry, Savita, I'm going to have to tell our story. I know that some of you are here because you listen to the podcast, Two Fat Expats, and some of you are here because you've read the blog, Four Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle, and some of you, like Savita, are just here for the free booze. So when I sat down, I said, "Hi, how are you? I'm Kirsty." And she said, "I'm sorry, who are you?" And I said, "Oh, she said, "I'm Savita." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I saw your name on the list of people coming." And she said, "Oh, are you an organiser here?" And I said, "Yes, I'm Kirsty Rice." And she said, "Sorry, Kerry Wise?" Which is fantastic because I reckon that's the leveller that everybody needs before they get up to talk, to remember that, that, you know, there's probably, I'd say, half the women in this room are maybe here for the free booze and the rest have just sort of seen something on Facebook and it sounded okay. Okay, so what I've actually done is I've written a blog post because that's sort of what feels comfortable. I always find if I go into the blog and sort of start writing. So when I finish talking, I'll push publish and it'll go out there today. We'll get started. It's after midnight and I'm sitting in a restaurant at the airport. I have all of my familiar airport paraphernalia with me, a neck pillow, a long scarf that will later serve as an additional blanket on the plane, my laptop, and a Samsonite computer bag with about 11 different hidden compartments. The blinking cursor is making its way from left to right as I type each letter into the familiar rectangle that frames a new blog post, except it's not a blog post, it's today's speech. Yes, at 1 a.m. and with 25 minutes to get to the gate in preparation for boarding my flight in Singapore, I am beginning today's talk. Earlier this evening, I sat at rugby training with three out of four of my children. With both boys on the field, it was my daughter and I who shared a table. As we discussed her latest obsession, The Outsiders, a novel she's been reading as part of her Year 8 curriculum, a novel which has completely captured her attention, I feel someone approaching me from behind my right shoulder. It is Joe. Joe and I have never met.
Jo looks nervous but determined and says as much. With a quiver in her voice, she says, "Excuse me, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but I've seen you here before and I just had to tell you about my daughter. I told her to read your blog. She needed some help with satirical writing and I said, read this lady's blog. It's perfect for satire with a warm voice. And you know what? She did. And her grades are up here now," she said, motioning above her shoulder. After I thanked Jo with the complete sincerity of a writer with crippling self-doubt, I turned back to face my daughter, expecting, you know, some sort of acknowledgement. My daughter is 14, so I knew it wasn't going to be a high five, but maybe a nod of agreement or, you know, even just an enthusiastic smile in my direction. Perhaps some sort of acknowledgement that there was more than one person in the world other than Granny Max who reads the blog. She was looking down at her phone when she eventually looked up and not only was expressionless but deeply disinterested. "What?" she says with a blank stare. "Did you hear that?" I teased, grinning. "Her daughter read my blog and now her grades are up here," I motioned towards the sky. "Oh, God, Mum, don't you dare make me read your blog," says my daughter, as if I was threatening her with the task of getting through Dostoevsky in a day. "I am not reading your blog," she reiterated in case there was any doubt. "Don't worry, darling, I promise. I promise I will never make you read the blog. The truth is that I hope one day, I don't know, maybe in 10 or 15 years, she will read the blog. I hope that one day she will see how I saw her, how we were all together. I hope that this blinking cursor has provided the space for all four of them to return and revisit our lives through my eyes. Is that not the wish of every mother? Have we not all looked at a heartbroken child with quiet desperation? I wish you could see yourself how I see you." Sorry. You know when you tell me that you cry? Well, I do too when I'm doing them. We had taken two cars to Rugby. Greg is currently driving a very small rented Peugeot sedan. It is ridiculously close to the ground for his 6'2" frame, but we can't decide what to buy and it's really cheap to rent and it serves a purpose. I'm driving our other car, which is often described as the living room on wheels. I have one child in the front with me. It's Fred. At 8 years old, Fred's teacher broke the news to us that while his everyday results appeared to be at the same level his peers had tested, he had tested off the charts at being able to discuss adult concepts. While he fiddled with his mouthguard and wiped the sweat from his brow using his rugby shirt, he chose death, funerals, the afterlife, and Donald Trump as the topic of conversation as we made our way home. As we pulled up at the traffic lights close to our house, I realised we were right next door to the other half of our family. There was my husband Greg, then Annie in the front seat next to him, scrolling through her music selection, the standard one earbud dangling from her ear. Henry Hot Dog was in the back, staring into space. G looks tired. He hasn't been sleeping. He glances right as if he can feel my presence and smiles a soft, worn-out smile. It has perhaps been... This bit's going to be hard and then we're all going to be okay. But it's perhaps been the longest weekend of his life and he is emotionally spent. My father lost his father to cancer on Friday. Now we're all going to be okay. So, I know this is not where we were thinking of taking this talk. It was not going to go this way, right? And trust me, neither did I. But it would just be so, so strange to stand here with so much stuff going on in the background and not mention it. You're the people I've been writing to for over 6 years, except Savita, of course. You're the people who understand what it means to be away from home and when something like this happens.
You're my tribe. I couldn't come here today and pretend. But let me take you back to last week before our life changed. I had an idea for today. I'd stumbled across a photo from 16 years ago, February 2000. The pic is our family's first ever digital image. Do you guys all have that? Like, yeah, it's the most bizarre thing, isn't it? You think, this is when we bought that camera and started this journey of digital life. Now, I know it's the first image because it was taken here in Singapore, about 100 metres from the front of this building, not far from where we'd purchased our very first digital camera. The video camera had a little flash card where we could snap moments in time while taking a video. In the shot, which is incredibly grainy and hard to decipher, I'm standing on Orchard Road out the front of Starbucks. You know the one that's just down here and goes down? G and I had come to Singapore from Jakarta for our very first ever visa run. We were so young and green, and we really thought we'd struck expat gold. After our first 6 weeks in Jakarta, we were getting a weekend in Singapore in a hotel paid for by the company, and they were making us go, insisting we went. A number of things happened that weekend. We had to move hotel room 3 times due to different dramas. We weren't here, just letting you know, Jordana. Leaking ceilings, cigarette-stained smoke walls and a party in the room next door. But the biggest thing I remember from that weekend was a pair of pink shoes, hot pink shoes. They were slip-ons with a soft sole that almost gave you a bounce with each step. And they were the most comfortable slip-on shoes a six-month pregnant woman could have dreamt of. I loved those shoes. So in a very grainy shot outside of Starbucks, you can see me glowing with a mixture of pregnancy and tropical humidity. So excited to be travelling, so loving my new shoes. So the plan was for today was to share the photo with you and chat about our former expat selves. What would we say if we had the chance to go back and meet our former expat self? If I was to walk outside now and see that Kirsty from February 2000 standing out the front of Starbucks 6 weeks into her first posting, what would I say to her? I asked all of you on Facebook, except Savita, of course, and there were some fantastic answers. Anne-Marie, who's here today and will kill me for mentioning that she is here today, came up with one of my favourites, and I think it's what I would say too, and that is walk away from negative people. Watch and just listen for a while. You know, it's those people that will drag you down in any place. Christy, who lives in Doha and is my new companion at the rugby club, said take photos of everyday stuff, lots and lots of photos. I wish I had pictures of our kitchen in Libya. I wish I had pictures of every car that we'd driven, just every kid's bedroom. I didn't think to take all those photos, just stuff that transports you back into that life. Amanda said, no matter how long or how short your stay may be, make it your home, which we were talking about just before. Anne said, spend more time to get to know the locals and less time in your comfort zone. There's nothing more embarrassing than leaving a place and you don't really, really know the culture. But it was Catherine Walwerk who had us all on the floor with this very bang-on statement. Train to become a hairdresser and specialise in blonde highlights. You'll make a fortune wherever you live. She said, I can't even begin to tell you how I looked after having blonde highlights in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. So that's what was going to happen. That's what we were going to talk about. But of course, expat life got in the way. When we got home from rugby, the everyday banal weaved itself within the grief. The organisation and the reality of what we had happening in the next few days amongst homework, teeth brushing and clarinet practice. I needed to get on a plane to Singapore. G and the kids had to confirm their flights to Australia. My daughter in Australia would have to miss a couple of days of school to come to Brisbane for the funeral. Flights needed to be rerouted, accommodation found. Teachers were emailed, and while everyone got ready for bed, I began packing. G was in his pyjamas, eyes barely open, when I made my way towards what must be one of the most often discussed expat conversations. How do I find the photos from 16 years ago when we were living in... Please tell me you're all as digitally disorganised as we are, because I've got no idea. I wanted that shot outside Starbucks to use today. I wanted to use those pink shoes. And as I loaded my suitcase with clothes for two countries with vastly different weather, I watched my husband fossil through the safe for a hard drive. He then looked for a different computer, circa 2009. I said, don't worry about it, Dales. I really don't need a photo. It doesn't matter. I knew I could survive without it. But good old G kept searching. I was walking back from the bathroom with my toiletries when I heard what sounded like two chipmunks. It was Annie, age 3, and Fred, age 2. A snippet of film that G had found, Our Life in Canada. He was making his way through the archives. They were wearing, brand new jumpers that Grandma had made and sent in the mail. Say thank you to Grandma, I heard my voice, the voice of my younger self. Two blonde-headed toddlers pushed their faces towards the screen and in unison said, thank you, Grandma. Kiss, I heard myself ask them. Fred turned towards Annie with his lips all puckered. Nah, says the voice coming back from her brother. It was the same look. Don't make me read your blog. The video stopped abruptly. By now I had completely given up on packing and was almost sitting on top of G's computer trying to get a closer view of my babies. It was like mother's crack. Play it again, I urged. G pushed play. I turned to look at G's face and I watched him. It was the same as mine, complete wonder tinged with sadness. Did that really happen? Is that part over? So what would I tell my younger expat self? I would tell her, you are so, so lucky, you and your pink shoes. You don't know it yet, but those pink shoes will walk you into a baby clinic in Jakarta in about 5 months' time, where a Scottish woman will take one look at those shoes and decide that you must be okay. She'll befriend you, and you'll discover later that half of her wardrobe is bright pink. She will become your best buddy in life and your lifeline for the next few years. Her husband will become the godfather of your firstborn. Right now, this sounds ridiculous because you've got lifelong friends at home. How could someone so new become so important? This is expat life. What would I tell my younger expat self? I'd say, you're so, so lucky. Just imagine if you hadn't gone. There will be so many trips like this where you and G will wander into a new country and stumble your way through it. This is your last trip as just the two of you. You are about to buy 7 different baby strollers. Take every set of stairs you can right now. They are about to become the enemy. What would I tell my younger expat self? Would I tell the truth? That it's really hard sometimes. That it's lonely and often unfair. That you have now made yourself different. Because once you see this life, you can never unsee it. That geographical schizophrenia is now an everyday event. You will long for one location while dreaming of another. Would I tell her that she will miss her grandmother's funeral because we just can't make every trip home that we want to? Would I tell her that her heart will feel permanently scarred from goodbyes? That she will be forced to leave tiny parts of it behind? That she will see pictures from past cities and faintly feel it ache as something stirs within? Would I tell her that she will continue to build and grow and then break apart again, having to constantly reinvent and reconstruct? Those pink shoes will get left in a cupboard. She'll never really know what happened. They were lost in a pack. They just never made it to the next country. She didn't realise immediately, it just happened one day. Kind of like the little silver figurine from under the coffee table. It just didn't make it. No one but she will understand why she cried when she realised they were lost and what those pink shoes really, really meant. So if I walked outside and saw her now, February 2000, Kirsty, I would tell her to jump in with both feet, to maybe listen more, speak less, and to write it all down, to take pictures of every bathroom, every kitchen, every new office, and every car purchased or rented. And I would remind her that for every article she reads about whether you've been an expat for too long, then to ask herself, would she really want the alternative? Would it really have been better if she just stayed at home? Of course not. And that's it. The end.
Well, that's just tears. I mean, really, that's just so... I don't know, you've been through a lot more since then, but that was... I mean, that is how you connect with people right there.
Oh,
that's where everyone loves Kirsty Rice.
Do you know what was so bizarre about that is, you know, obviously when I write things that people say, oh, my God, I was in tears, I'm always in tears as well, right? But I always feel like such a wally if I say, yeah, I know, I was crying too. Do you know? But usually if something is sad, I've had a big cry while I've been writing it. But what was so strange, because I've never done a reading like that before, it was a strange weekend because my father-in-law died on the Friday at lunchtime and I had a reading to do for the Breast Cancer Council on the Saturday where I sort of wrote about the breast cancer experience, and I didn't say a word about what had happened with my father, and I guess because I knew it was far too raw and, you know, it's that whole thing we were saying before,
yeah.
You don't want to go into the conversation. And so I just went and I gave my reading and then I promptly got in the car and left. And so what was so different about getting to Singapore was, you know, I sat down the night before, like I flew into Singapore, and I'd written, you know, the first sort of half of it, but I was thinking, I can't not tell these guys what's going on with me. I can't not say where I'm going and what's going on, because it's just too bizarre, because these are my people. Do you know, these are the people I talk to all the time. And so then to be reading it and to look up and see so many people in tears, it was like, oh my God, this is what it looks like. Do you know, when people are sitting at home, it was just...
Yeah, but did you feel that? Did you feel like this is what it must feel like to when they're all sitting at their computers reading it?
Yes, because you could just feel that, and without wanting to say to sound too wanky, but it was just such a beautiful, lovely, warm room of people. Do you know, at the end, when it was all done and dusted, I mean, we, you know, I gave the reading and then we said, does anyone have any questions? And I think the second question in was, how's your health? And, you know, people were more sort of concerned about that, you know, how are you and are you okay? And, you know, it just made you realise that when people come up and they say to you, oh, well, I read your blog when I lived in Russia and then I read it when I lived in Balikpapan and now I'm reading it when I'm in Singapore and, you know, you've come with me everywhere I've been and, you know, it's incredible. There's no words.
Well, I think that's what Kelly said when she introduced you. So she said, you know, these Facebook groups that are so prolific now didn't actually exist even...
Yeah.
6 years ago when she moved to Singapore.
Yep.
And she's like, you were where she found you online. You were a blogger. You were writing every week or writing very often about your life. And she she started reading it, and then she became an expat and then went on that journey. And a lot of people feel that they've been on the journey with you, and that's like that's a big responsibility, Kirsty, right there. No, but what I want to say is it's like, you know, I don't want to say you like Kim Kardashian, but, you know, everyone has an opinion about Kim Kardashian because, you know, they follow her, or they look at her Instagram, or someone's seen Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I don't know, not me. My husband does watch it. But I just, you know, so everyone feels like they know you, and that must be a bizarre feeling when people meet you and go, oh, Kirsty, yeah, hi, you know, yeah, about your, you know, four kids and how's the beagle, and you're like...
The beagle's got a bung leg, just if anyone's wondering at the moment. The beagle's extended a tendon or something, so we're having to look after her. But, yes, I do know what you mean, but the same thing happens on the flip side of when you walk in and someone, you know, a really great girl, Danielle, came up and to have a chat. And I was thinking, are you the Danielle who's done this, 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 this and this? But I didn't want to say, because I didn't want to offend her in case she wasn't the Danielle. It turns out she was the Danielle. So then it was like big bear hug. Oh, my God, you're Danielle. But and there's lots of that. You know, are you this Joe or this Joe that I've spoken to? You know, because everyone's just got their first name there. And we all know, you know, Facebook profile pics don't help that much at all. I feel the same way. Like, you know, when people talk about online relationships and, you know, that there's not that reality to them, I would disagree vehemently on that one, because I find that the people that I talk to online and connect with from the blog, there's a reason why we get on, and it's because there's a similarity there in our lives and we've got something to talk about. I have yet to meet someone who's like, oh, I read your blog and, you know, I've been talking to you for 2 years, who I haven't then thought, oh, you and I could be friends.
Yeah.
You know, because
there's no, absolutely,
connection there. And I was walking through the supermarket today, or walking back to my car from the supermarket today, wearing my sunglasses because I was incredibly jet lagged and thinking, oh, I can't believe I'm back in the rut. You know, when you get off the plane and you're like, I've been to the supermarket, we've taken the kids to school, we're back in the rut. And I walked past this woman and kind of smiled at her, and then I got to the door and I heard her say, oh my God, I love your blog. And I turned around, she's like, I'm sorry, but I just realized who you are and I just wanted to say I love your blog. Anyway, we started talking and I really like her. Do you know, like, she, it turns out that she's about to have her fourth child. She's moved here. She's from Australia. She knows a mutual friend. Her husband is here working for a similar company to my husband. She lived in Adelaide for a while. Do you know, so there's, I left saying, oh, well, look, let's catch up. And that's what I mean. There's usually a reason
why. Oh, my God. I'm struggling to make friends and people are accosting you in supermarkets.
And I think people are quick to be judgmental about women online. And I think there is, I walked out of our Big Fat Expat meetup thinking, I want to do more of these because these are really good for expat women, and it was a good connection and it was a really good feeling. And I think we should do these again, because I just... It was like having all the good warm fuzzies of the blog and the podcast and everything all there in reality. It was great.
Yeah. And maybe what we should do as part of our ongoing series of Big Fat Expat Meetups, send us your suggestions where to go. We should catch up with the people that were on those tables next time we do a meetup and say, hey, did you guys make a friend that day, or did you make a connection? Did you find someone, and, you know, what's happened? Because I think that's what it's all about. As you say, it was about people sort of fronting up, and then it was about people being really freaking brave to just turn up by themselves. I mean, that is a big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all very well online to pay your money and then go and but to turn up and not really know anyone, especially when there are groups of women standing around chatting like they've been friends their whole lives, which they may have only been friends for 3 months, but as we all know, in an expat world, it happens quickly and you crash, and it's fantastic when it works. But when you're standing on the outside, it looks pretty
Yeah, it's horrible. And yeah, I agree. And I think if there's anyone listening who was on the table of I came here by myself, can you please, please, please leave us a message, which involves just going to the Two Fat Expats page, twofatexpats.com, and you'll see there's a little microphone button there. You press it and you can leave us a message. But if you could, that would be fantastic, because I'd love to hear if you did make a friend or you have done a catch up with someone afterwards, if there was any exchange of numbers or how you felt about it. I think that would be great. And also if you've got a suggestion of where you think we should have our next one, Nikki and
yes,
I will start working on it.
Yes, we're going to do a live podcast, yes. You see, and have a Q&A and everything. We've got big plans, people. Just tell us where to go.
But the thing was, it all went so fast and there were so many amazing stories and, people had their own very personal stories of moving and what it's meant to them, and there were lots of tears that day, I have to say.
They were kind of happy tears,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely, definitely. No, it was really, really good. Okay, so social media, Nikki, what have you been watching? What have you been doing?
God, so much. I'm just because when you don't have any friends, you got more time at night for social media. So I actually was watching before this week. So this is like we've missed a week. So this was sort of what I had prepared for last week. But Wiener, the documentary on Netflix.
I've heard about this. I've heard it's really, really good.
It's fantastic, and I was watching it and then I rewatched it with my husband. I said, you have got to watch this. And so we watched it again together, and then the next day the new FBI thing came out. So, I mean, it was just very timely that we were having this whole conversation. So even since the documentary, he's had another scandal, and then as a result of that, the scandal since the documentary is why his computers and phones were seized, which is why this whole next FBI thing has come up.
So the latest scandal involves a girl who's underage, right?
Yes, yes. Oh. Messaging with an underage girl, which is hideous and horrible and whatever. But the whole fact that he allowed his campaign for the Democratic nomination for the mayor of New York City to be documented after he had been through one sex scandal. And then there was another one unfolding and he was still letting these people film him every day. I was like, it was just like a train wreck. It was like watching a train wreck. And it just gives you an insight into like the mind, like what was he even thinking? Like it's so interesting.
And is it because he's a total egomaniac, or is it because he's stupid, or because he's married to the woman who works for Hillary, right? Is that, have I got that right?
Huma Abedin, yes. Mm. So they remain married. So she was, the first scandal broke when she was pregnant with their child.
Oh.
And he was a congressman at the time, and he resigned and then worked on his family, whatever. And then 2 years after that, he decided to run for the mayor of New York City. He wanted to see if people had forgiven him and he could move forward. So she supported him and they put together a bid to run, and he was leading. He was going to be the Democratic nominee. Bill de Blasio was like nowhere, and Bill de Blasio is now the mayor of New York. So that's like the incredible thing, that this is like a reflection of what could have happened.
Yeah.
And so then this other scandal came out and he just crashed and burned and had to withdraw from that race as well. So then these people went about making, thinking they had what a winner, this great documentary, because these two scandals had happened. And then since then is the third scandal, which is why the FBI is involved, which is just like, anyway, it's quite, if you're interested in politics, which I am, it's interesting, but it's just interesting in terms of the human condition, that how these things happen.
Yeah.
Like you think they couldn't happen, but they can.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What about you? What are you watching?
I have been watching, because when I got home on the Wednesday, it had been the grand finale of Survivor the night before. So I went into, I've got to catch up with all of this, and then proceeded to watch about 10 episodes of Survivor. Yeah. But didn't obviously do the whole 10. I did the cheats version of watch the challenge, watch the immunity, watch the tribal council.
Yeah.
So, yes, I went all through Survivor, which was fantastic. I could not make myself watch The Bachelorette, which was on in Australia at the time. It did absolutely nothing for me and I had no interest in it, but that's what everybody else was talking about at the time. And then listening to, I'm up to the last one of the one that we talked about the other week, Phoebe's Fall. Did you end up listening to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course I did.
Yes. So I'm just halfway through that last one now.
But you know, every time I listen to it, so every episode at the start, they have the same recording of the same sort of three or four things, and then they add other bits at the beginning.
Yes.
But they have the mother every time saying, and I asked him and he said, are you sitting down? I'm like, if I was the mother, I could not listen to that every single time. It's just when you know what comes next is just every time I just think, oh, that's so grim. Like, I think it's great, the podcast. I think it's really interesting and I've enjoyed listening to it, but I just think that is just, it's almost cruel. It's visceral. Like, it just, I feel a physical response whenever I hear that part of the intro.
But also think it's quite an odd thing for him to have said, are you sitting down? I don't know what you say to prepare someone for the news that that's happened, but it was such a gruesome thing. But are you sitting down? I don't know. I always think, are you sitting down is I've had a car accident or, you know, I've got some, I lost my job. Yeah, I lost my job or, you know, are you sitting down? But I don't know. I don't know what you do say to someone.
I would probably say that because of me of the awkward statements. So there you go. That's why it doesn't seem strange to me. But yes, listening to Phoebe's Fall. Now, I've been listening to Anne-Marie Slaughter. Now, we remember Anne-Marie Slaughter from writing your favourite article, Why Women Still Can't Have It All, that we talked about.
I love that.
Anyway, I was listening to Mamma Mia Out Loud podcast this week, and it was like they were following us for stories because they talked about that article. And then yes, they did. And then they talked about how Mia mentioned how a couple of podcasts that she'd listened to that Anne-Marie had done. And one of them, and so then I went and just on my Podcast Addict app, which I totally love, you can just search people's names and it just brought up every single podcast that she's been in. But I actually listened to two that were from Australia. So one was a series done at the Opera House called Ideas at the House. And she spoke there. And then she actually went to the 2016 Adelaide Writers Week.
No.
And spoke there. Yes. So I knew you'd be sad that you missed that. I remember thinking, I wonder if my mother-in-law there, because she goes to all loads of those things down there.
Now tell me, what did you call it?
I don't have an iPhone. I am an Android girl. Mm-hmm. I have a Samsung Edge 7, which I love.
Is that one of the ones that's going to blow up on the plane?
No, that's a Note. You see, people with all Apple products just go, oh, everything else blows up. But anyway, so we don't have iTunes so on our phone. So the best way for us to find podcasts is by the Podcast Addict app. So that's what it's called. And I just go on there and whenever I hear about a new podcast or something, there's a search function and it does an iTunes search. But you can just search by name. So as I said, I searched for Anne-Marie Slaughter and it brought up all these masses of different podcasts, different people that she'd been in. And so I could just choose which ones I wanted to listen to.
But Samsung or not, that sounds like a great app because I don't think you can do that in iTunes, can you? Can you just do someone's name and they'll pop up? I don't think so.
I don't know. I didn't try it, but it's a great – I don't know if they have this app for iOS. I think it might just be for Android, but I don't know. I'm not saying people. Right, don't
I'm
yell at me.
It. I'm going to do it right now while we're talking.
Okay.
Just in so case anyways, we get in trouble.
I'm now on to my next podcast obsession, basically – from that thing, but I'll talk about that next time.
Oh, do you know what? It does work. It does work. So if you're on iTunes and you type in Kirsty Rice, It does. It'll show, like this podcast, but it'll show other podcasts that I've
where you've been on.
Yes, yes. I'd never thought of doing that, of doing so. If I put in Anne-Marie Slaughter, because that article was great. That was the article we talked about, wasn't it, that was in The Atlantic.
Yeah. And she wrote a book after that article called, I think it's called Unfinished Business, and it is quite amazing. Yeah, it's called Unfinished Business. So the podcasts are two talks that she gave, and then there was a Q&A on both of them. And it sort of fleshes it out a lot more, and it gives a lot more understanding, and it made me just like, oh my God, I love this woman. She's amazing and fantastic. Mm. And, you know, I just was so inspired by listening to them. And I obviously have ordered her book as well. Even in hard copy, I want to touch it.
Yes, yes, yeah. And I can see here now, yeah, that she did. She spoke at Adelaide Writers Week, and it's got all of these things, that she was on the Financial Times podcast and Sydney Opera House Talks and Ideas, which she said Girl Boss Radio.
Oh, yeah. So she's actually she's a political commentator. Like she's has been a political commentator as well, but these true talks she gave were more specifically about the whole women and working and men and
yes,
the world order.
Yes. How are you going with our book group book? Yes. Well, I had downloaded it on my Kindle app on my iPad, and then I left my iPad in Doha when I went to Australia for the week and to Singapore. So I haven't read any of it this week, but I plan to get stuck into it. But I'm really, really keen. I think it's such a great book.
I am keen too, and a lot of people have said how good it is and how much they enjoyed it. But I just wish it was on Audible, because then I could listen to it. Because anyway.
Oh, well, I promise you, if I write a book, I'll put it on Audible for you so that you don't,
well, and can you
don't have to go through the taxing notion of reading the words.
No, but it's just easier to do it when you're doing things.
Yes.
Like when you're
cooking,
or when I walk to the supermarket every day, so it's on my walk, my daily walk. You know, if I go to the kids' school, which I'm doing this afternoon, it's on my train trip.
Yeah.
You know, all those things. And you don't have to get a book out and put it back and in. You can listen, and you can also be aware that you don't miss your stop, because you can look at the same time.
And now, what do I have to promise you? I cut in. What were you asking me to promise you?
Oh, you have to promise me when you do the book on Audible that you read it yourself.
Oh, really?
Because I think, yes, well, because your voice is very important. And I think that the reading that you did in Singapore has proved that people have a great reaction to you reading your own work. So you might like to find a voice actor, but I think you should read your own book.
Like David Sedaris does.
You know, just like he does.
I love that man. I love David Sedaris.
I went to see him in Atlanta. It was awesome.
Did you really?
Oh, yes, I did.
He was in Australia when I was having radiation, and I just couldn't, like, summons up the energy to throw that into the weekend as well. Do you know what I mean? It was the whole I'm working, I'm going to radiation every day, do I really want to get on a plane and go and see him and then fly back? But that's on my list of to-dos within the next 12 months. I have to go and see David Sedaris. Yeah.
He was amazing, and I really, really enjoyed it. And so I just downloaded one of his books recently on Audible. See, and I listened to him, and I feel like an affiliation because I've seen him in real life and I know that's his voice.
Yeah, yeah, he's good. All right then, so next week we are going to talk about when you love your location but your kids hate it.
Yes.
And
I did. Yes.
Sorry.
I've done one of the interviews for that.
Fantastic.
And it's really interesting.
Oh, good, good, good. I think, the person that I'm speaking to has got a fantastic job, a really, really interesting job that when she was telling me about it, I was like, oh, that's amazing. And then in the next breath she said, yes, but our kids hate it here, so I'm not going to be able to keep doing it. And it was like, oh, wow. And I also wondered whether a man would have the same reaction. Do you know? I'm not sure.
I Yes, and I agree. And there's the Anne-Marie Slaughter dilemma.
Yes, yes. All right, so next week that's what we're talking about. Thank you, Nikki, for putting up with me during my hiatus of heading off to Singapore and Adelaide. And, oh, my God, I think in the last 6 days it's been Singapore, Melbourne, Adelaide, Brisbane, Sydney, Doha.
Is that one flight a day? Does it average out at?
Yeah, probably averages out at.
But good things, you got to be with Greg and Greg's family.
That's
which
right.
is amazing.
Yeah.
And you got an extra sneaky time with Lizzie.
Yes, it was very sneaky. And that's the thing, it's that whole saying inappropriate things because, you know, we'd be like, oh, well, we've got to see Lizzie again. And then you'd think, oh, we're not meant to be happy about that, but we are happy about that. But, do you know, it was strange because that first night I went and got Lizzie from school. I'll tell you one thing that did happen and then I really will stop this podcast and stop blathering on. But I had to go and pick her up from school in the afternoon. She had softball practice and I had a meeting at her school to discuss my second daughter and if we had plans with her. Yes. So I was driving down a street in Adelaide and there was Lizzie walking to softball training with a group of her friends and the softball coach. And so I watched my daughter walk down the street in her school uniform on her way to softball practice. And I know to anyone who has their children at home with them all the time, this is no big deal. This is an everyday event, right? But for me, it just made my heart just about burst. And I was thinking, oh my God, that's what you look like when you're going to softball practice. And she looked so happy. And it was like one of those beautiful sunny Australia days. And she was laughing and talking and, you know, they were on their way to the park. And it was just fantastic because it was like, oh, look at you look so happy. And just seeing her in that sort of natural environment, which is
so,
yeah.
You didn't wind down the window and start shrieking and honking the horn and say, Lizzie, I'm here, Lizzie.
No, I didn't.
Oh, good work, good work.
But then when I did get her, we went to the airport and we picked the others up from the airport. And, you know, we had that hour in the car, you know, when we drove from the airport back to our place at the beach before going out to dinner. And they're all so beautiful together, right? Because it's the reunion, you know, everyone's so lovely and nice and nobody fights and everybody's happy to see each other and they all take the mickey out of each other but giggle about it while they're doing it. And so I guess that's the thing. We wouldn't ever have had those reunions if we hadn't had the goodbyes. And there is nothing like it. It is fantastic.
Yes, and that's another thing. You don't get the good without the bad.
That's right, yes. You don't get the hellos without the goodbyes. Okay.
Okay. All right. We had a long one, but I think, you know, we had a week off, so maybe everyone can listen for 10 more minutes.
Yes, yes. Okay. All right. Well, I will talk to you again soon.
Okay.